Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back. Second hour of Open Forum today on Catholic Answers Live. That means any question you have about the Catholic faith, about Catholic people, Catholic practices, history, theology, we're happy to sacraments. We're happy to take those calls. 888-318-7884. You do not have to be Catholic to call. Anybody can call with any question about the Catholic faith. 888-318-7884. Our guest this hour is the president of Ignatius Press, Mark Brumley. Mark, thank you for being with us.
Great to be with you.
And what's new at Ignatius Press?
Oh, there are always new things. I think last time we talked about the Formed app, or maybe we should have, formed.org.
Yeah. Right.
Some people call the Catholic Netflix. You guys are on there. Ignatius Press movies and films are on there. Augusta Institute's outstanding programs are on there. And now there's an app that you can put on your mobile device and press a button. I think we talked about that last time.
A little bit.
So everybody should go out and type in form.org and go find form and sign up. Or if your parish already signs up, make sure you're a registered user. Okay, that was last time. So this time, I want to mention a book that we came out with, which is called Why Don't Call Myself Gay, by a fellow named Dan Mattson. And Dan has written an outstanding personal story, his own experience as a same-sex attracted man, and having lived in a certain lifestyle and having undergone a conversion of life, he gives his perspective on what it means to live the life of chastity as a same-sex attracted person and why he doesn't like to identify himself as gay or identify himself in a way that suggests that he's living or espousing a way of life that is at odds with the gospel and true human fulfillment when it comes to sexuality. So Dan Mattson's book, Why I Don't Call Myself Gay, been out.
I'm proud to say I have the book on my bookshelf, and we had Dan on. We did an extended focus interview with him. Just an extraordinary person and a great
Excellent.
Book. Yeah.
And he's a great musician, too.
Yes, we talked a little bit about music. He told me that Mahler's Third Symphony is his favorite symphony to play.
Okay, awesome.
Apparently.
I mentioned the book not just because it's an Ignatius book, and I want to plug Ignatius Press books, which of course I do, but because there's a lot of controversy in society today and even in the church about the proper response to people who have same-sex attraction. And I think you're hearing from a lot of people who have experiences or they interpret their experience in a certain way that is at odds with a Christian understanding of authentic human sexuality. And I would say even a kind of natural law, natural reason understanding. So they're at odds on that on the one hand, but you're not always hearing from people who have a different experience, who have an experience that reflects the church's teaching and reflects what we would say is an authentic understanding of human sexuality. And so it's good to have those voices out there, not just me,
right,
a heterosexual married man talking about the subject, but people who have actually struggled with issues of chastity in the context of same-sex attraction, because those can be very powerful and uplifting stories for everybody. So that's why I mention it.
Very good. Dan Mattson's book, Why I Don't Call Myself Gay, we can highly recommend it to you. And just any Dan's also in a wonderful movie of the Everlasting Hills, Desire of the Everlasting Hills.
I was wondering if you were going to get it.
No, I couldn't remember the first word. You fluster me every time you're on here, Mark.
It's like, it's like the seven deadly sins of apologetics or how not to share something or other or whatever.
So you notice I don't even try anymore.
I'm sure the marketing department loves the fact that you don't try to mention the title.
It's because if you're going to get it wrong every time at some point, Just stop. Just find something else to talk about. Mark has a very fine book, and the name of the book is... Go ahead, Mark. You tell him.
The Seven Deadly Sins of Catholic Apologetics.
And it used to be called... No, we won't say what it used to be called.
It's been called How Not to Share Your Faith.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
And it's published by...
Catholic Answers Press.
There you go.
Yep. And they're pretty good. One of the best Catholic presses. But I wouldn't say the best... when I have Mark Brumley on with me.
Is, but, you know, second place is pretty good.
I'm thinking about, can I call you El Presidente because you're the president of Ignatius Press? Can I?
You can call me anything. Just don't call me late to dinner.
All right. That would be a weird name anyways, late to dinner. How about we go to calls? It's open forum. You ready?
Let's do it.
All right. We go to Damien in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, watching on YouTube. Hi, Damien. What's your question for Mark Brumley?
Good evening, gentlemen. I am asking this question as a practicing Catholic here. I read Leo Tolstoy's trilogy on his beliefs some time ago. Are you guys familiar with those?
Well, I'm familiar with Leo Tolstoy. I'm not sure I'm familiar with his beliefs other than he was a Christian kind of anarchist, pacifist fellow, but beyond that, I don't know too much about it.
Well, I won't be verbose about it here. I came prepared with bullet points. He said,
"Oh, okay, very good."
The entire philosophy of Jesus can be summarized in non-resistance to evil. So, no armies, no accusations, no courts or trials, no private property, no oaths, titles, or rank, and he all but disregards any kind of divinity. Trinitarian concept. So my question is, given Tolstoy's mostly heretical, sometimes mistaken, but apparently earnest teachings, what can we say about his relationship with the church, and what can we speculate about his teachings with God? Thank you.
Wow. Well, I would say he's sometimes heretical, sometimes otherwise mistaken, and sometimes right. So, I mean, I wouldn't have a whole lot to say about that. I can speak more generically about people who are sort of move in the, we might call them Christian fellow travelers, who sincerely take elements of the Christian faith and try to extend the elements that they have to a worldview or a political view or an ethical system. And so that, what is that going to mean practically? That's going to mean they're going to get some things right and some things wrong. And Tolstoy was obviously a great writer of fiction, and he was a notable commentator on social issues of his time. But the Catholic Church is going to say you're wrong to the extent you espouse anarchy. You're wrong because there is such a thing as a legitimate form of government. You're mistaken to the extent that you espouse pacifism because there can be the just use of force in war or in police. You're mistaken if you think that a strict following of Jesus requires that people never defend rights and things of that sort, or that they don't have private property. So on those points, we're going to be critical of Tolstoy. But I don't think that's – I think though that's not really Tolstoy's legacy. Again, I'm not an expert on Tolstoy. You know, I read War and Peace a long time ago. I've read a couple of his essays on Christian – what might be called Christian social teaching – as he understood it. But I'm going to say you get some things right, you get some things wrong. But the real force of Tolstoy is a questioning about the resort to violence or the resort to the use of force, whether by the state or by the church. A correct relative valuing or disvaluing, I might say, of property and material things, understanding that we're not made for this world, and so therefore the things of this world need to be possessed, to the extent they can be possessed, with a certain detachment. He goes too far in that regard by denying private property and so on. But there's a underlying element of what he is about that's sound, namely this kind of detachment from material things. So that's what I would say. I don't know enough about the details of Tolstoy's life. I know towards the end of his life, I guess he was pretty ascetical in his personal manner, but I don't know enough about the details of his life to say how well he followed his own interpretation of Christianity. But it's seriously deficient from I would say both a Catholic and a traditional Protestant, and certainly a Russian Orthodox perspective.
Damien, thank you very much for that call. I'm impressed, Mark. An entire discourse on Tolstoy, not a mention of the beard. It's obviously his most important feature.
Well, I let Jimmy Akin handle questions.
He's got a little bit of a Father Russia beard. Yeah, Jimmy Akin. Thanks so much again for that call. Open Forum, the whole hour today with Mark Brumley, president of Ignatius Press. We'll be right back with more after this.
It's all about the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
We as Catholics need to stand strong, to be prepared to mount a daily defense, to respond to the many challenges that we as believers are presented with every day. Jimmy Akin is here to help. His innovative new book, A Daily Defense, takes up a different challenge for every day of the year, 366 in all, teaching you how you can defend the faith and give answers to Catholics and skeptics alike. And it's user-friendly, with challenges and answers indexed alphabetically, so finding the answers can be quick and easy. Order your copy of A Daily Defense today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Wouldn't it be great to have a book to give to anyone to explain exactly why Catholics believe what we believe? The good news is that now there is. Why We're Catholic is the groundbreaking new resource by apologist Trent Horn, that one book you can hand to anyone as a starting point for helping them find their way into or back to the practice of the Catholic faith. Don't miss out on the most important, life-changing book to come along in years. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Homeschool Connections has recently formed a partnership featuring a dual enrollment program with Franciscan University of Steubenville. Our website is homeschoolconnections.com. We are a proud sponsor of Catholic Answers Live.
Do you love sharing the gospel and want to learn to be more effective? Join the St. Paul Street Evangelization Online School of Evangelization. You will learn to build bridges of trust and make disciples by befriending strangers, proclaiming the gospel, inviting people to the church, and praying with others. We'll ask for a pledge of financial support, but if you are unable to give, we'll give you a membership at no cost. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, open forum. Mark Brumley, president of Ignatius Press, our guest this hour. Any question you've got on the life, the faith, the history of the Catholic Church, and you don't have to be Catholic to call, you just got to use this number, 888-318-7884. That's 888-318-7884. If you are on Facebook, YouTube, or Periscope and you type in a question, we will try to get to it. But I'm less hopeful in that regard. We'll get to as many as we can there. Mark, you're coming to our conference September 28th through 30th. Is that right?
I just thought I'd blow that off.
Oh.
Yeah, I told you I was coming.
Okay, so as far as we know, you're coming to our conference.
That's the plan. Lord willing, and the creek don't rise.
And I have Erica Santana in here who's organizing the entire thing. She has joined me in studio with...
Yeah, I hope I make it too.
You better make it, Erica. And she's with what is apparently the new mascot for the conference. You have to tell me the name of the King Charles. Or
it's a Charles? King Charles Cavalier Spaniel.
King Charles Cavalier Spaniel.
Wow.
Chris Chex.
It's Chris Chex.
Child or dog, I mean. And it's now the mascot.
Apparently, he made an appearance on the show last week. I didn't know. And during that appearance, it was said or mentioned that he would be present at the conference. So
yeah. And he said there would be doggy treats for everyone.
I should know this and meet him.
Yeah. Dogs are excellent. Not that good on radio. So we just describe
him. Look at
this
face.
Yeah, he's got a beautiful radio face.
I hope the dog is praying for the success of the conference.
I don't know. Do dogs have that kind of soul? We'll have to get into that about the soul of animals.
Si, why don't you call in on Catholic Answers Live and see if they can answer that question?
And I'll ask that. Okay. Whenever I'm off work, they never seem to be on. I don't know why that is. So the reunification of all Christians is the theme of the conference. It's a very important theme, especially this year, the 500th anniversary of the rupture of Christendom. And you will be speaking, Mark, on what?
I will be speaking on whether apologetics and ecumenism are friends or foes. Can we be committed to ecumenism, as the Second Vatican Council was, and as the popes since then have been, and at the same time engage in apologetics aimed at trying to persuade Protestant Christians that the Catholic Church represents the fullness of Christianity, and even engaging in, you know, arguments on those issues? It would seem that to do the latter is at odds with doing the former, and vice versa. And we're going to explore whether or not it is.
That's actually, I better go to that talk, because I need that. That's very germane to what we do here at Catholic Answers. We better straighten that out, Mark.
You know, I think it's amazing that the organizers of the conference, the Catholic Answers Conference, have selected a topic for me that's germane to what Catholic Answers does. It's just amazing. You guys nail it every time.
Is there some sense of irony in his comments? Is there maybe a little sarcasm there?
You think? A little bit, maybe?
Oh, my God. Even the answer to a question about sarcasm. All right. Tell us a little bit, Erica, about why people should
come. Mark said, he's going to be giving his talk, and we have an amazing lineup of speakers on top of our own. We have Tim Staples, Jimmy Akin, Trent Horn, and Carlo Broussard, but we've also lined up a couple of guest speakers. Mark is one of them, and we also have Devin Rose and Steve Weidenkopf, and Chris Blum is also joining us. So we have a great lineup of speakers. It's at the Hyatt Regency La Jolla here in San Diego. For our local people, this is really a big deal. Last year we had an exorbitant fee for parking. We've lowered that to $8.
Wow.
With this new hotel, that's a stellar price for in-and-out parking. And we've got a special deal going on right now for anybody who's listening.
Yes.
You can be local. You could be anywhere you are. We have a great deal. If you recruit 5 people, it could be friends, family, parishioners, anyone you want. If you recruit 5 people, we'll give you your 6th ticket free.
Mm-hmm.
So if you recruit 5 full tickets, we'll give you a full ticket free. If you recruit 5 talks only, we'll give you a talks only ticket free. You do have to call into the office and speak with me to do that, because we are also offering, with that special deal, early bird price, which is no longer available. Oh, Fezzik's getting a little
fuzzy.
Oh, so
if you get 6 people together, you're going to get the early bird price.
5 people.
Oh, I thought
and
it was
everybody.
Plus
no.
yourself.
5 people plus total. Yourself. You get 6 total tickets.
Yeah, yeah.
You get 1 free, basically, and you get all the tickets at the early bird price, which is a steal right now.
Excellent.
All right.
So
just
call in, or you can email conference at conference@catholic.com. And if you are looking for more info on the conference, if you want to see the lineup or the schedule or any information on the hotel, go to CatholicAnswersConference.com.
CatholicAnswersConference.com. And all the talks, we promise you, will be germane to what we do here at Catholic Answers. Isn't that correct?
Excellent.
Thanks,
and
Erica.
You'll get to meet Fezzik. So.
Yeah, and thanks for bringing Fezzik in.
Yeah.
He's really cool. And if you'd like to see Fezzik,
I would go to the conference just to meet him. Look at how cute he is. He rests his little head on the counter.
He looks like he has the kind of personality that he could do apologetics and ecumenism.
I would totally
at the same
believe
time.
Anything he says.
I would think that. Ready to take more calls, Mark?
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks, Erica. We go now to Giuseppe in the United Kingdom. Giuseppe, your question for Mark Brumley.
Sorry, it's me again. How are you?
It's fine.
We're well. How are you, Giuseppe?
I'm very well, thank you. It's okay. Saying that, you know, I'd love to come to that conference, but it's a bit too far away from me, unfortunately.
We'll do it there in the UK. We'll come.
That'd be great.
Just get us a venue and pay for that venue, and then
we'll come.
About 20 plane tickets, and we will be there, Giuseppe.
We'll be there. and invite the Queen, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Then you'd bring me, then I can go for free.
Yeah, right. You can come for free if you do that, Giuseppe. Yes.
Right. The question is, just very quickly, a friend of mine was watching a 007 film the other night, and we were just talking about this very quickly, and I said to him, well, if James Bond was a devout Catholic, but that was the nature of his job, you know, doing the killing and sleeping with all the different types of women to get information and one thing after another, how would the Catholic Church view him and God? Would he be saved, or would he be beyond salvation or penance, whatever? And I was just wondering, you know, like if James Bond was a real person doing that kind of spy work.
Right. Okay. So, Giuseppe, you're thinking his job might override his other moral obligations in this case. Is that because it's his job?
You know, the fornication, sleeping with all different kinds of women.
Oh, well, you don't have to keep saying it. We get the picture, Giuseppe. You don't have to. Okay.
Well, I want to ask Giuseppe if he knows the name of the actor Patrick McGoohan.
Patrick McGoohan?
Yeah, he starred in the Prisoner TV series from the 60s.
Yes.
Okay, and Patrick McGoohan, he was in a series before that called, I think we called it Danger Man here in the United States, but I think he was Secret Agent in England. And he was offered the role of James Bond, after Sean Connery. And he turned it down, and he declined it partly because he, as a Catholic, couldn't do some of the scenes in the movie with the women. He didn't think it was appropriate to be doing that with someone he wasn't married to. But more to the point, he didn't want to glorify or glamorize the kind of lifestyle that James Bond represented. Now, I think Patrick McGoohan was on to something. His Catholic conscience would not allow him to play James Bond, not because he felt he could only play people that, you know, were moral people, but because he thought that James Bond glorified or presented as a positive thing this kind of lifestyle. And I think that it's very difficult for me, at least, to see how someone who could do the things that are depicted in a James Bond movie that James Bond does and see those things as consistently or consistent with being a devout Catholic. You mentioned some of these things, fornicating, although usually James Bond is depicted, at least traditionally, as someone who isn't going around killing people who you know, don't deserve it in a sense, either in he's doing it in self-defense or, you know, they're going to do something harmful to the world, that kind of thing. Nevertheless, a lot of things that he does do are problematic from a Catholic perspective of morality. So now, of course, we know, we watch movies, there are heroic figures in movies, James Bond is a heroic figure. He does a lot of good things. But as a Catholic viewer, I'm watching that and I'm thinking there's some things that they're showing me that he does that are immoral, they're inappropriate. And each person who's watching a movie or reading a novel in which a major figure that's presented by the author in a positive way is a way to be emulated or at least admired, and you, the viewer or the reader, have moral objections, you have to decide how you're going to respond to that. I'm not suggesting you watch or read only those things where the central characters, the heroes, all only and always do what a saint would do. But it's something to keep in mind. And certainly I can understand why somebody would have serious qualms about the way somebody like James Bond is depicted in a film and say that's, you know, that he were a real person, there would be problems with him living that way if he sought to also be a serious Catholic.
Right. That's what I wanted to say. If he was a real person,
right,
and he had, and that was his job, how would he sort of, what would he do? Would he
have to change his job in the sense of saying, there's certain things that you're expecting me to do in this job that I can't do in conscience, or he'd have to find another job.
Which is the case. There's a cost to being a disciple of Christ. There are some things that we just simply can't do. I have this recurring nightmare that someday Giuseppe calls and he doesn't have an English accent anymore, and he's just kidding. I wasn't really calling from the UK all those times. I was got some kind of New Jersey
accent.
He's faking
you, man.
Yeah.
He's faking you.
But I trust Giuseppe. I'm sure he's on the up and up. But no, Giuseppe, you can't be a 00 agent. That comes directly from Mark Brumley. More Open Forum on Catholic Answers Live right after this.
Hi, this is Father Robert Spitzer, president of the Majus Center of Reason and Faith, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
We've all heard the phrase, the new evangelization. In previous centuries, missionaries would travel to foreign lands to evangelize, but today's missionaries are more likely to focus on fallen away Catholic neighbors or relatives. But what about the old evangelization? The two millennia of Catholic missionary efforts by the likes of St. Paul, St. Augustine of Canterbury, St. Francis Xavier, and most importantly, our Lord Himself. We must not forget the methods they used to spread the faith to the farthest reaches of the world. Our situation may be new, but the essentials of evangelization always remain the same. In his new book, The Old Evangelization, How to Spread the Faith Like Jesus Did, author Eric Sammons provides a practical guide to putting these essentials into practice in everyday use in your interactions with family, friends, coworkers, and even fellow parishioners. Order your copy of The Old Evangelization today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
With his new DVD, Understanding Revelation, Decoding the Bible's Most Mysterious Book, Jimmy Akin unlocks the secrets of Revelation so that anyone can understand them. Packed with almost 2 hours of eye-opening material, it paints an entirely different picture of the book of Revelation than the one most people already have. The book of Revelation was meant to reveal God's message to his church. And in Understanding Revelation, Jimmy Akin shows you how it does exactly that. Order your copy of Understanding Revelation today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Raymond Arroyo.
Part of the success we've had on the world over, I attribute to the audience, my relationship with Mother Angelica, and her teaching me that when you sit with someone, you talk to them, and you create an environment where they will tell you things they wouldn't tell anyone else. That ease, that humor, that warmth, she gave me that, and that's what I try to impart and make a part of every interview we do on the world over.
The world over. Tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern on EWTN-TV and radio.
I love Thursday second hour music. Every day should be Thursday second hour music. That's some rocking tunes right there. Now I'm all fired up.
Great, man. We can move around and everything.
Yeah. Cool. It makes you want to, like, yeah, cut a rug. Do people know what cut a rug means anymore? Let me ask one of the young people. Do you know what it means to cut a rug? One does. One doesn't. Mark, you know what it means to cut a rug.
I do know what it means.
Open forum. We got another half hour. We're going to power through calls because we have so many calls, and Mark Brumley has so many powerful. I was so impressed, Mark, that you knew a Catholic actor who had turned down the part of James Bond to answer that question. I kind of for a second thought you had planted it with Giuseppe. That was really impressive.
No, I did not.
You're not going to believe this.
As I said before, I'm not as good at that as Jimmy Akin, but there are some things I'm good at.
No, Jimmy Akin's Jimmy Akin. I mean, that's like You're talking about a guy from another planet.
When I grew up, I want to be Jimmy Akin.
Right, we all do.
For the long term.
This might surprise you, but now we've got a Skype call again from the UK, from Cardiff, UK. Benedict, you are on with Mark Brumley. Your question, please.
Hello. I wanted to ask a question about how you would respond to the Protestant idea of soteriology that works flow freely from a saving faith. So Protestants would say, you know, if you're not doing work, then it shows that your faith is dead and you were never saved in the first place. Whereas Catholics and Orthodox would say you have to keep working for your salvation to achieve it in the end.
What would I say? Well, I would say the Protestants are partly right. Works can flow from a saving faith, but we'd want to drill down a little bit and say, what do we mean by saving faith and what do we mean by faith? We would agree that faith is a response of a grace-enabled response of the human person to what God has revealed. Okay, we agree about that. We're going to say, though, that for that grace to be saving, it's also going to have at least the beginnings of love of God. So it's not just believing what God says is true, but beginning to love God. And that is also grace-enabled. And then we talk about the cooperation or the Christian living out a life of discipleship. We would say, well, a disciple of Jesus is someone who's following him, following his example, following his teaching, trying to implement the teaching of Jesus in one's own life. That's what a disciple does. And so that's going to involve works, not works of the law in the Pauline sense of these activities associated with the Jewish law to indicate that you're a member of the community of the elect, or even in an extended sense, we're not doing these works as badges to say, yeah, we're in. We're doing these works out of love of God, in response to God, the God in whom we believe. So I would say a fully biblical understanding of salvation says that it's rooted in faith as the condition of response, but that's a faith that has at least the beginnings of love of God, and that those beginnings have to be nurtured and deepened in a life of obedience, which occurs by grace. So Catholics and Protestants both sometimes use these terms, justification and sanctification. If we think of sanctification as becoming holy, becoming God, like God, by grace in our response to God in the situations of our life and the challenges that he calls us to in our obedience of works, we think of that as sanctification. A Catholic is going to say that justification involves or includes an element of sanctification. Being in right relationship with God, what justification is going to include elements of responding to God and growing in love of God. So it's going to involve sanctification. There's a Protestant who's going to tend to want to separate those and say justification is an initial declaration that you're in right relationship with God, and that's what is your ticket to heaven, as it were. I'm grossly oversimplifying. But then you live out a life of good works out of love of God, but those things are not essential conditions for your relationship with God to grow and get you to heaven, but they reflect the fact that you have that relationship. We're going to say that's going too far. That's misconstruing elements of the biblical revelation on how we're brought into right relationship with God and how we grow in that relationship. So that's what I'd say.
How's that strike you, Benedict?
Thank you very much. That answers my question quite well.
Oh, very good.
But,
all right.
Thanks, Benedict.
Thank you. And you're our third UK caller today. So it's I think that might be a record, at least since I've been.
Well, we should have asked him what he thought about James Bond.
Oh, man. Why aren't you the host, Mark Brumley? Why aren't you the host? Jeff in Omaha, Nebraska, calling from America. We got a call from America. Watching on YouTube, your question, Jeff, for Mark Brumley.
Hi. So I'm Catholic, and I'm not entirely familiar with the ecumenical councils, but sometimes I'll hear Protestants say the councils are not consistent with each other, and this council contradicts this council, and so they say, how can the church teach infallibly if the councils aren't consistent. I was just wondering what your response would be to that.
Yeah, well, my response would be I'd have to ask some questions of somebody who said that. When they say the councils aren't consistent and they use the word ecumenical council, I would want to know that they are using that word to refer to the same thing that the Catholic Church refers to when those terms are used by Catholics in Catholic theology. But if assuming that they are, and that these are councils which are made up of bishops, not just for some region of the church, but representing the whole church, and those are bishops who are in communion with the Bishop of Rome. Those are the sort of key elements for determining whether or not a council is ecumenical. I'm going to say I don't believe when we look at those aspects of conciliar teaching, the teaching of those councils, and we isolate the things that are being presented in a definitive way, that is to say, in a way that Catholics have to accept, I'm going to say I don't see any evidence that there is a contradiction. Now, there's lots of things, there are lots of councils that aren't ecumenical councils, and some of those councils or synods or regional councils may in fact conflict with the Bible or the Catholic understanding of the Bible or the teaching of other ecumenical councils. But if we're talking about an ecumenical council compared to ecumenical council, and we're talking about things that are taught by those councils or required matters of belief of those councils, not just things that happen to have been said at the council or things that are mentioned in passing in conciliar documents, but are actually presented as definitive teaching, I'm going to say that there's no contradiction.
Jeff.
Thank you very much. That helped a lot.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Jeff.
Very good.
Thank you for that call. We go now to Gene in Boston, Massachusetts, listening on 1060 AM. Gene, thanks for your call. What's your question for Mark Brumley?
Hi, everyone. Thank you. I have a question on divorce and remarriage. I'll try to be simple here. I was married for 25 years and then divorced. The both of us ended up remarrying other people. We were both married by a justice of the peace, and that was 8 years ago. And to move forward now, sadly, 8 years later, and just this past January, my first husband passed away very suddenly. I spoke to a priest shortly after that about returning to the church, which I so desperately missed, and asked about the state of my current marriage. Mm-hmm. He was very kind, and he suggested that my husband and I, that we have our marriage blessed. I didn't mm-hmm. really know what that was at the time. He explained, you know, my husband is Jewish by tradition, I guess, for lack mm-hmm. of a better word, but he's a non-believer. Mm-hmm. I was always, even though divorced, I was always very faithful Catholic through my life, but we had that terrible thing that happened, the mm-hmm. divorce. So my husband, my present husband, will not go through with anything like that. He will not have our marriage blessed. And so I went back to the priest, and he knew how much I wanted to make things right. And he said that I shouldn't be deprived of my faith, the sacraments, because my husband is unwilling to. And I asked him, you know, I mean, I was very thrilled to hear that I can come back. And I went right back, and I've just been thrilled every day since. But I asked him, you know, so I won't be living in sin or anything, right? And he said, no, you're fine. Just keep on doing, you know, what you're doing. Go to confession, take the Eucharist, come to Mass and everything, which I had, you know, I hadn't been before that time.
And were you not satisfied with that answer, Jean? I just need a question for Mark.
Oh, sure. I just have that feeling. There's just something. I guess I'm not satisfied with the answer.
Okay.
I'm looking for something maybe a little bit more defined by the word or something.
About your current status.
Current status.
Yep. Okay, Mark?
Have you talked to any other priests?
I did. Actually, I talked to one other. I talked to a, both of them were Franciscan priests, just, you know, by coincidence. They're very kind people, easy to talk to. They both felt the same thing, and they both asked, is that what the other one said too? And,
okay.
You know, because it's different. It's different.
Well, I would recommend you go to, well, a couple of things. First, I would recommend that you find somebody, and this is not meant as a slight to Franciscans, but just, you know, find a regular diocesan priest, describe the situation to him, and get his advice. That's the first point. The second point has to do with your relationship with your husband, and I'm curious why he's opposed to any sort of church-related blessing on your union.
Well, he's a non-believer, and he just thinks it's ridiculous. He doesn't go to synagogue. He will
right,
never.
And, but you're not asking him to become a Catholic, are you? You're just saying
nope.
That as an aspect of your own faith, this is important to you, and you're asking him if he would go through with this ceremony that is an aspect of something that's important to you. You're not asking him to become a believer. You're not asking him to make any kind of commitments to the Catholic faith. He's just renewing his commitment, his marital commitment to you in the presence of someone who represents the Catholic Church for something that's of value or important to you.
You're saying exactly what the priest said to me. Exactly that. I can't believe it. I mean,
right.
So exact. And I said that to my husband, you know, mm-hmm. And he said it's just ridiculous to ask anything like that. We were already married by a justice, and that's enough for me.
Well, okay, and that can be enough for him. But you're just saying that was something that was done that didn't reflect your faith, but you'd like to do something now. You're asking him, not because you're saying anything critical of what you did at that time, but because this is an aspect of your life that's been renewed, and you like that your relationship with him to become part of that aspect of your life. But it sounds to me like it would be helpful for you to go to another priest, and perhaps that priest might be someone who could give you some advice about your current situation and perhaps how to approach your husband and what to say to him. And maybe even, you know, he might be willing to, you know, your husband might be willing to talk to the priest for the priest to make these points. I would say, but it's really important to regularize your relationship. And obviously I'm talking to you on the phone and I don't know the details of your life or any of that, which is why I think it's really important to talk to another priest, you know, in the situation to get that additional perspective on things. But certainly keep going to Mass and keep praying. I would say do that.
And Jean, I have to say thank you for the call because we have to take a break. Very sorry for the loss of your first husband. And I sincerely hope that was helpful. We'll be right back with more Open Forum on Catholic Answers Live right after this.
Your questions, Catholic Answers, live.
Christian men, beware. With the idols of materialism, entertainment, and the flesh, it's plain to see that the world wants you for its own. Face it, it's tempting and easy to be a man of the world. Father Terence Ehrman has a challenge for you. Be a man of God instead. In his new book, Man of God, lessons to young men about life, sex, friendship, vocation, and loving with the heart of Christ. Father Ehrman draws on his experiences counseling men who are struggling to live in the world, but not be of the world. In a unique format, he offers a plan for ongoing conversion, holy spiritual direction for all men who want to master themselves and be transformed from within. Order your copy of Man of God today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In John 12:24, Jesus said, "Unless a grain of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains a grain of wheat. But if it dies, it produces much fruit." Certainly, he was aware that seed only appears to die. But his point was that we need to die in order to live. We are to daily die in the sense of denying ourselves in order to love. This is what he meant when he said to his followers, "We need to take up our cross and follow him." This is not a strategy that Hollywood or Madison Avenue or even most governments can fathom. Our culture goes for the easy, convenient, immediate results that gratify me first. But for those who believe, the greatest moment creation has ever known was the moment when God Himself endured death, that we might live as we have never lived. It remains for us to live not for ourselves, but for Him. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Open forum, Mark Brumley, the president of Ignatius Press. I forgot to call you El Presidente today. I was going to call you El Presidente all day, and then it slipped my mind. Next time. But we were talking. I wonder if you could elaborate just a little bit, because we were talking to Jean before the break about her personal situation, and that's hard, that you need to sit down with someone face-to-face to do that. But if you could clarify for us a little bit, Mark, the approaching communion and receiving communion in situations such as Jean's.
Yeah, it's difficult because you don't know the details, so you're speaking in generalities. But you know, generally speaking, I mean, people who are in marital situations or marital-like situations need to get those situations resolved consistent with living a life of full communion in the Catholic Church. So that means a life consistent with going to confession and receiving the Eucharist, receiving other sacraments. That's why it's important to bring in a priest. And I don't know the details. I only know what Jean said, and I couldn't always hear everything she was saying. So I wasn't quite clear on this with respect to the priest, the first priest she spoke to. But it's real important to make sure that those priests fully understand the circumstances. And that would include the current circumstance with the man she's civilly married to, who is not a baptized person, and also some of the things that went on in the previous relationship. That's really important. So I want to underscore that. And that really isn't just specific to Jean, but that really applies to everybody in these complex marital situations, to have a good priest, not just a sympathetic priest. It's important to have a sympathetic pastoral priest who's doing his best to bring you into full communion with the Church and all of that, but also someone who's very knowledgeable about canon law and about who can ask the right questions about the current union and relationship. We don't want to be the Holy Father said the Eucharist is not a prize for the strong, but a medicine for the weak, and that's true. But we want to make sure that we are, as it were, prescribing the right medicine for the right weakness or the right illness, and not treating the Eucharist or the Sacrament of Reconciliation as a kind of reward for sincerity. So that's why it's really important that these kinds of pastoral matters be explored. Probably not best to explore them in any detail on the radio, but to try to do that with a real-life priest who's sympathetic, but also who's competent and knowledgeable about the fullness of what it means to be in communion with the church. So that's what I would say.
All right. Thank you, Mark. And we go now to Rodney in Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WLHN. Rodney, your question for Mark Brumley.
Yes. Rodney Pickering here. Question, shouldn't we apply the same litmus test that Gamaliel proposed to the Sanhedrin for Peter and the apostles when they were about to kill them, in that if it was of God, there wasn't anything they could do about it. And if it was of man, there wouldn't anything happen anyway. And I guess I would say using that same litmus test for Martin Luther. I'm a Baptist, but I've converted to Catholicism. And I heard on the station about the irreparable damage that Martin Luther did. Excuse me, I'm a little nervous.
That's okay.
No, you're very clear, Rodney. You're coming through very clear.
Yeah, the irreparable damage Martin Luther did.
I see.
And I've also heard it's either Father Mitch Pacwa or Father Larry Richards, and I can't remember if it was one of the two, I think. 99% sure, because I work with our local Catholic radio station here, that indicated he was saved through a Billy Graham crusade award by Billy Graham, and then came to the Catholicism.
Yeah, I don't think that, I don't think that was Father Mitch Pacwa, but I know there's a significant apologist who says that, and I'm drawing a blank on who it is. But Rodney, if I could just kind of restate your question for Mark. We're having a little trouble with Mark being able to hear all the calls. But basically, Rabbi Gamaliel said about the early church, to his recommendation to the Sanhedrin, leave it alone, because if it's of God, you don't want to be fighting with it. And I'm paraphrasing, of course. And if it's not of God, it'll disappear anyways. And you want to apply the same, or you want to know, could we apply that same logic to the Lutheran Church, for example, or other churches that came from the Lutheran tradition?
I would not say necessarily to let me finish. I would not think I would apply it necessarily to a particular church. I think I would apply it to Martin Luther himself.
Okay, fair enough. Let's let Mark take a shot at that.
Okay. Well, of course, Martin Luther didn't continue. He died, but I get your point. A couple things. First, this is reflecting Gamaliel's view of the early church. It's not necessarily saying this is a divine revealed maxim, but it's sort of commonsensical that if a movement is from God, you're not going to be able to overcome it. That point is sound. Where Gamaliel says if this is from men, it will fail. Well, we have to be careful, because there are lots of false religious systems that exist in the world and been around for thousands of years and continue to be, even though Christ has come in the world and revealed the fullness of the truth and so on. We're not going to say that those religions must be true religions, that they must have the truth, because otherwise, if they were from men, they would have failed by now. So we have to be careful. Gamaliel is speaking in the Jewish context, and he's saying in this Jewish context, what God has promised to his covenant people, if you see something and it's from God, you're not going to be able to resist it. And if it's from mere men, it will eventually die out. And I think I think there's some commonsensical human wisdom in that. But I don't think we can extrapolate beyond that and say, well, because a particular belief system has continued after the Christian era, that somehow means that's valid. Now, with respect to Protestantism, we're going to say that obviously Protestants have baptism, they have the scripture, and they have the life of the Holy Spirit and all these kinds of things, because they have a real, though imperfect, communion with the Catholic Church. So we should expect, to some degree at least, to see Christian vitality exist in these communities. But that doesn't mean that in all respects that they are properly ordered Christian communities, or that the fullness of divine revelation exists equally in any group of people who happen to be baptized and happen to have the scripture and believe in the scripture. So we can say, yes, God is at work and well can be at work, in Protestant churches, but that work does not tell against the claim that the fullness of what God intends for his church exists in the Catholic Church.
Rodney, thank you very, very much for the question. Thanks for everybody who called today for our open forum. Mark Brumley, president of Ignatius Press, thanks for being with us for an hour.
Si, it's been great. God bless you.
And you got two Brits, too, so that's pretty good.
Brits.
Yeah. We'll see you next time on Catholic Answers Live.